Hello everyone and welcome to episode 33 of season 1 Reading with Grace, where we will continue reading The Unwanted's Island of Fire. Today we will be picking up from chapter 46, but first a quick recap of chapters 41 through 45. Karina Holiday joined Alex's crew last minute, and Alex realized he was never going to have a relationship if he remained mage like Mr. Today. The ship has started to head off course towards the island beyond Warbler, which Simber noticed completely disappeared underwater. Alex and Sky shared a meaningful kiss. The third island, apparently known as Pirate Island by Sky and Crow, resurfaced from the ocean and nearly capsized the boat. The ship landed on Pirate Island and Simber took a look around, but he found absolutely nothing. No creatures, humans, or anything else. It's completely deserted. Still stuck. Alex and Simber decided it was safer being on the ship than on the island, and there wasn't much they could do in the dark, so everyone tried to settle in for the night. Alex stayed on the deck near Simber. He lay his back staring at the sky, his arms propping up his head. He couldn't sleep knowing that, any second, without warning, the volcano could sink back into the sea, creating a vortex that would pull millions of gallons of seawater and their boat into its mouth and swallow them up. The ship's whispers grew stronger, or maybe it was the quiet night that made the whispers seem louder. Alex wasn't sure. He could hear a soft purr somewhere nearby, more kitten-like than Simber-like. It was a comforting sound, and Alex was glad someone was feeling comfortable. He couldn't stop thinking about being responsible for all these lives. He couldn't stop thinking about Gunnar Hluki losing Henry and Lonnie, about Karina's son growing up an orphan, never really having a chance to know either of his parents, about Artemy losing so many great leaders. Maybe it had been a bad idea to bring so many of them with him, but he needed them. If they could ever get out of this lagoon, Alex would need them desperately. He fell in a fitful sleep, waking at every sound, expecting to be swallowed by the volcano at any moment. When at last the sun rose, Alex stood up, shivering a little in the cool morning air, waiting for the rays to warm him. He could see Quill, a dot in the east just as the side of the sun, and Warbler, a large lump on the horizon with its rocks jutting out. In front of him, the volcanic pirate island loomed blue-black and craggy and ominous, throwing spooky shadows everywhere. As far as Alex could tell, the fiery outburst had subsided completely. Alex peered beyond Pirate Island to the west, knowing there was one more island out there somewhere. He thought he spied something rising up from the water, but it wavered and moved, the sea playing tricks on his tired eyes. Simber stretched his hind legs, first one, then the other, and then arched his back and yawned. Alex leaned over to the side. "I want to explore," he whispered, not wanting to wake anyone. "Maybe there's a clue somewhere about how to deprogram the ship." Simber nodded. "Just you?" Alex thought for a moment. He shook his head. "Be right back," he said. He picked his way over sleeping bodies in the deck, making his way to the bow where his friends had camped out for the night. He bent down next to Karina and shook her shoulder. She roused and was wide awake in an instant. "What's wrong?" she asked. She smoothed her pixie-cut hair, but still stood up in one spot. "Will you come explore the island with Simber and me?" "Sure," Karina said. She got nimbly to her feet. Alex grinned. He stepped over to Sky and found her already awake. "Want to explore?" Alex whispered. She nodded once and then said, "But not without Crow." Alex flashed her a puzzled look. "Okay," he said. "He can come too, no problem." Sky stood up and woke Crow, and then the four went back to the side of the ship nearest to Simber. Crow rubbed his eyes sleepily as he stumbled along. Alex signaled to Simber, and the great cat unfurled his wings, making a bridge to the ship. Alex hoisted Crow up on his wings first. The boy crawled along it to Simber's back without fear. Sky went next, and then Karina, and finally Alex.
"Hang on," Simber said quietly, then loped along the shore and flapped his powerful wings.
Soon they were soaring overhead toward the rocky shore, and then the short journey was over. Simber landed, and everyone got down.
"Stay close. If anything begins to move, jump onto my back," Simber said.
Alex hesitated. He glanced back at the ship, realizing that thanks to Simber, the four of them were probably safer here on the base of the sinking volcano than the others were in the boat.
"That's why," Sky said softly, reading Alex's mind. "I can't leave Crow. We live and die together. I took that oath when I took him from me with Warbler."
Alex and Sky followed behind Simber, Karina, and Crow. Alex glanced at Sky with admiration.
"That's pretty noble of you," he said.
"He's the only family I have now."
Alex wondered what she meant, but didn't dare ask. It felt personal. She touched his elbow.
"I'm sorry I kissed you," she said softly. "That was weird. I know that you and Lonnie are... whatever. It was just... I wanted to feel like...
She sighed.
Oh, never mind. I know you and Lonnie, you know. And not me, and that's okay, because I'm not sure about things either. So you don't have to feel, like, bad.
She blushed, fingering the scars at her throat. Alex looked down, feeling strange and empty inside. A sort of airy rushing sound batted him around his ears, almost making him dizzy. But when he remembered to breathe, his brain went back to Mr. Today and how he'd seemed destined to be alone.
Don't worry, Alex said, trying to sound cheerful. I've already forgot about it.
But it was the biggest lie he'd ever told, so big that saying it made his skin hurt.
Oh, Skye said. Good. Then she added, me too.
And she was silent. They climbed over the rocks and globs of seaweed and tiny pools of water, looking for any clues that would indicate why a ship would want to come here. After a quarter of an hour, they reached a long, flat piece of land with some vegetation and wet sand. Several planks of rotting wood stuck out from the dirt. Alex pointed to it. Could someone have lived here once? It looks like a frame of a house.
That's what I was thinking, Karina said.
There was a rivulet coming off the side of the mountain, washing away some of the sand. Alex put a finger in it and tasted. This is fresh water, he mused. He didn't understand where it possibly could have come from. Crow ran ahead, climbing some sort of rocks to see if he could find the origin of the stream.
Stay close, Skye warned.
I'm just going right here, Crow said. There's a flat spot and a little pond. He hopped up and looked around. Karina followed him. Alex frowned. He wasn't sure they'd find any clues about ships in a place where ships couldn't get to. He gazed around the flat area and then went to the edge of it, where waves lapped the shore and peered into the water. A fish jumped almost under his nose. Whoa, he said, and he stepped back, laughing at himself. It jumped again in almost the same place, which was strange. And then Alex saw it had a hook in its mouth attached to a line of fishing wire. The fish shrank down as if it were being pulled and disappeared. He rode around to tell the others, but before he could say anything, Karina gave a shout and Crow gasped. Forty-seven. A face in the pool.
What's happening? Alex said, and he ran for the rocks where everyone else had already gathered.
A person, Crow said. I saw a person.
Are you sure it wasn't your reflection? Skye asked him.
I'm sure it wasn't his reflection. I saw it too, Karina said. She knelt down at the edge of the shallow pool of water, stuck her arm in, and pushed the wet sand away from the bottom. Skye and Alex stood behind her, looking over her shoulder. Simber opted to watch from above. As Karina slid the sand aside, she revealed the water's bed. It wasn't the black rock that made up most of the entire island, not this part. The bottom of the pool was clear, like a window. Crow put his face near the water.
I can see down there, he said with a loud whisper.
There are people moving around, way down at the bottom.
Karina made room for Alex and Skye. It was like they were standing on top of a glass box, or a skylight on the roof of a tall building. They could look through this window and see the glass walls with fish swimming outside the sides.
It's like an aquarium, Alex said, breathless.
Only the water is on the outside and the glass encases a dry world. He looked up at Simber.
It's a reverse aquarium.
Look, Skye said, pointing. Here, on an upper level, there's a garden.
And there's a playground at the bottom, too, Crow said. See the little kids jumping around?
It's really light down there, Karina mused. So there must be more skylights like this one. And there are walkways and little rooms on this upper level, too. But look, see how the volcano runs down the center of it all?
That must be their source of heat, Simber said. And the sun, I suppose.
The five watched the people, oblivious to the ceiling visitors and their busyness scurry around far below. Alex pointed wordlessly to the floor directly beneath them as a sliding glass door opened, making a sheet of water pour into the reverse aquarium. Someone walked in through the water wearing a strange mask. The door slid shut again. All the water that had come through disappeared through a gate in the floor, none of it flowing to the floors below. The person was carrying a strange fish on a hook. He turned his mask off and placed it on a shelf, and then walked around the corner with the fish.
That hook is in his hand, Alex said, intrigued. He caught the fish right where I was standing there, he pointed.
It was Crow who noticed the creatures, in a real aquarium attached to the reverse aquarium. Crow could just barely see things swimming around.
I can't see what those things are, but they don't look fish-shaped, he reported.
I wonder if anyone down there can help us, Alex said. I suppose we could dive down and see if they notice us through the glass wall.
Everyone was quiet, wondering if these people were friendly, or if being seen would only get them into more trouble.
They seem normal, Karina said weakly. She looked over her shoulder at Alex.
I think we have to try. We don't have a choice.
Alex nodded. I can try right here, I suppose. He scratched his head, thinking.
No, this spot is where the guy was fishing. It doesn't look like anyone else was over there.
The ship took us to a certain spot, Simber said. Perhaps for a reason.
Good point, Alex said. Let's go back there, and then we'll have help from our army in case we need it. While Karina, Alex, and Simber plotted, Skye stared through the glass, frowning. She nudged her brother and pointed. He turned to look, and then he gasped. Before anyone could stop him, Crow began pounding on the glass with all his might. Skye whipped her hair out of her eyes with her hand and stared, then grabbed Crow's arm to stop him from pounding.
No, she said. We don't want them all to see us. Watch.
When a woman walked on the floor nearest them, not 20 feet away, Skye leaned over the glass, stretching her shirt wide to block the sun.
Watch, she whispered again. I'm a cloud.
Her heart thumped. The woman, in sudden shadow, looked up. She frowned, and then her mouth slacked, and her orange eyes grew wide. Skye choked on a sob, which caused the others to turn and see what was happening. Immediately through her tears, Skye's hands flew through the air, speaking a language few of the others knew. The woman held her finger to her lips and looked all around. Alex went to Skye's side and put his hand on her shoulder, feeling it quake. Crow simply clutched the rocks on the edge of the pool and stared, a look of agony on his face. Then the woman signed something very quickly and scurried away to a set of stairs. When she disappeared, Skye slumped back into Alex's arms and sobbed. He pulled her to him and patted her back, unsure what to do. Karina knelt next to Crow.
What's wrong?
Crow's face crumbled.
That stupid creep told us she was dead, he cried, his face hot with anger.
Who was that woman? Alex whispered into Skye's hair, though he thought he knew. She took a deep breath and pulled back, still clutching Alex's shirt.
Our mother, she said.
Waiting. I told her about the ship, Skye said. She let go of Alex, wiped her eyes with the back of her hand, and sniffed a few times. She slid back to the edge of the glass so she could see.
She said don't dive down. Don't let anyone see us.
The others stared at her.
She's going to try to find out how to disenchant the ship so we can get away. But she's only... She's a...
Skye pounded her forehead and took a few deep breaths, blowing them out.
Come on, Skye, she murmured.
Alex had never seen her so upset before.
She's a slave to the pirates, Crow said, his fiery eyes narrowed into slits.
Karina put her hand on Crow's shoulder, and he let her leave it there.
I'm sorry, she said, and I'm sorry someone told you she was dead. What a horrible thing to do.
It was Queen Agala.
He nearly spat the words out. Karina said nothing. She only lowered her head and rested it on her free hand, closing her eyes. Simber perched on a nearby rock, not wanting to be seen through the glass.
Did your mother say how much time the volcano stays above the surface?
He asked in a rare, gentle voice. Skye shook her head.
There wasn't time to ask. She had to hurry.
That's okay, Alex said. We'll wait. And then, once we've got Sam and Lonnie, we'll figure out how to get her out of here. His stomach felt like he just swallowed a dozen lead milkshakes. One more impossible thing. Skye looked up at him, her bottom lip quivering. He read the question in her eyes. I mean it, he said. The look she gave him was enough to warm Alex through. He glanced at Karina, who was watching them curiously with a little smile. Alex bit his lip. It didn't matter what anyone thought. He would be the same as before with Lonnie until Lonnie figured out that he was never around to hang out with it anymore. Which wouldn't take long because Lonnie was pretty brilliant. And even if he wanted to, there was no way Alex could go running to spend all his free time with Skye after that. It would hurt Lonnie's feelings and make him seem like a total flake. Not a good look for a leader. Maybe that's why Mr. Today had stayed alone for so long. Alex felt his face growing warm with all the staring. Look, he said, is that her coming back? But it was someone else, a woman in an enormous, flouncy, feathery dress. At least Alex had turned the attention away from him. He got to his feet and stretched out a cramp on his leg. Then he went to join Simber, who had found a place to wait on a perch above a cliff above.
I don't know what else to do but wait, Alex said. Do you?
Simber sampled the air.
Florence knows we're here. She can send Rufus if they need us. I don't think there's anything else we can do.
Alex's stumble growled. We should have eaten breakfast. Simber yawned and closed his eyes. Alex shrugged and sat down, leaning against the beast. Karina, Crow, and Skye waited by the pool of water. All of them desperately hoped the volcano would remain above the surface. Crow's harsh whisper started Alex awake. He scrambled down to the rocks as Skye spoke with her hands at top speed, and then he peered over the edge and watched the woman hold up a piece of paper with strange words on it.
Memorize it, Skye said. Hurry!
I'll take the last line, Alex said. I've got the third, Karina said. First, Crow said. Second, Skye said.
They all stared, trying to think of tricks that would help them remember the strange words. Alex suddenly remembered that he had a notepad with him, and he pulled it from his pocket. He tapped it, making a pencil drop out of nowhere. He began scribbling the words. Too soon, the woman snatched the paper down and shoved it in her meager peasant dress. They each recited their lines, and Alex wrote down the words, correcting the spelling as the others told him to. When he finished, he held the notepad face down just above the water. Skye's mother squinted, trying to see it, and then she nodded and began speaking to Skye once again. Skye replied, and they went back and forth for several seconds, almost as if they were arguing. Then Skye gasped. Her mother whipped around. A rugged man in a billowy shirt with gold bars on the shoulders approached her. She shook her head vehemently, but he grabbed her by the arm and pulled her away. The last thing Alex saw was Skye's mother turning back and mouthing the word, "Go!" Skye held her fingers to her lips and sent a kiss, but it was too late. Her mother didn't see it. The Death Enchantment. Skye scrambled down the rocks with the others right behind her, and she told them everything as they hopped back onto Cimber and headed to the ship. She said the pirate ships are ancient and enchanted with the lost language, the original language of their owners, which is why we can't understand what it's whispering, Skye explained. My mother said this saying is carved into the wall of the volcano, and she's seen her master disenchant ships before when they've returned to the lagoon. I guess when someone dies aboard the ship immediately whispers its wishes to turn back home and steers itself there. Weird, Alex remarked. It must have run aground on our island as the sailors were dying and never had a chance to go home. So it's been whispering ever since, Corinne mused. Yes, as I recall, Mr. Today thought the sailors might be able to be revived, and he tried, but it was too late. Did your mother say anything else? Skye was silent for a moment, and then she said in a softer voice, Mother said we should go quickly and never come back. There's no way to save her. She bit her lip hard. Everyone from the outside who has tried to get in has drowned. Alex looked at her, feeling a rush of courage. Then we'll have to figure out how not to drown. Skye looked down. You mean it? She said. It wasn't a question. Yes, but we're not prepared today. We'll have to come back. After. Of course, she whispered. After we get the others home safely. Home, Alex thought. She called it home. The conversation weighed heavily on all of them as Cimber dropped the four aboard the ship. As he did so, the volcano rumbled and a belch of flame shot from its mouth. Bits of glowing lava dripped down and sizzled in the lagoon, and a small glob landing on the ship's deck. Seen jumped to attention and stamped the fire out. Sheesh, Alex said, eyeing the volcano. Let's get out of here. Alex and the others placed their hands on the ship, railing. He nodded to Skye. You want to do it? She stood startled. Me? Why not? Just hurry, please, Cimber said from the shoal. We're still in grave danger. Skye nodded. Okay. She read the words in a slightly faltering voice, not knowing if she had the accent right. When she finished, they all craned their necks and strained their ears, listening to the whispers. When nothing happened, Alex nudged her. It's okay, try again. He knew more than anybody that things didn't always work right the first time. She took a deep breath, and then she and Alex shared a quick private smile. She had to remember to breathe, too, sometimes. And then she read the words once more, louder this time. Everyone waited. After a moment, the ship's whispers grew faint, and soon they were gone completely. With a startling snap, the sails flew up and the anchor chain groaned as it wound itself. The Artemians cheered. Captain Ahab, Alex shouted, the ship is now yours. Can you get us out of here? Blast my skull, came the muffled reply. The ship's sails had already picked up the breeze, and the vessel began to move as the captain clumped to the wheel. He shouted orders to some statues he trained on the sails, and with the help from Florence and Cimber, they managed to turn the ship around, moving nimbly around the shoal, as if the captain had done it a million times before. When they were on the open water once again, Alex grabbed a few sandwiches from below and brought them to the upper deck. He found Skye, Crow, and Henry at the stern, glumly watching Pirate Island grow smaller. Sandwich? He asked, toying them out. Thanks, they said, each taking one. Alex sat next to Henry. The four ate together in silence, with Cimber as always overhead. I'm really sorry about your mother being there, Alex said. He knew he could never understand what they were feeling because his experience with his mother was so different, so clinical. But he thought she might feel something like that when Mr. Dedea died. The overwhelming pain and grief. He knew a sandwich couldn't fix it, and he knew he really couldn't make it better for them. It was going to be hard no matter what. But he also knew that they were having his darkest moments. Skye was there, and Alex would try to be there for her, too. She picked at her sandwich, not really eating it. Crow took a bite and chewed it forever before he could swallow it. Alex looked at Henry, who had lost his mother, and he just shook his head. So much stupid grief, he muttered. Every day brings another broken heart. He stood up abruptly and looked a little embarrassed at his poetic sentiment, but no one seemed to think it was a silly thing to say. Alex gave each of his friends a quick squeeze on the shoulder and walked through the crowd to the bow, frowning completely beside himself. As he stood there, wind in his hair, he realized how much he ached to make something again, something creative, something useful, something beautiful or meaningful. It seemed like forever since he'd had a chance to just sit and create something. He thought about Mr. Today in the Museum of Large, how the old mage had worked on his private thoughts by fixing up this ship, and how he created so many amazing creatures and statues. "If we ever make it home," he said to the wind, "I'm going to build something beautiful." Fifty. Gondolieri Rising. "Secretary!" Aaron barked. Eva Fathom rushed into Aaron's office, finding him standing at the window yet again, staring at the water. "Yes, High Priest Aaron?" Aaron turned slightly toward her, acknowledging her presence, but not taking his eyes off the sea. "Who are my enemies?" he asked. Eva's eyes widened. She hesitated, not sure what Aaron wanted to hear. "Artemy, of course," she said. Aaron scowled. "Here in Quill, I mean." "You have none that I know of," Eva said smoothly. "Of course I do. Every leader has enemies. I need you to find out who mine are, and then round up the restorers for a meeting here at the palace this evening." Aaron picked his teeth with a thin stick he kept in his breast pocket. "I'll begin right away," Eva said, her voice even, though she was quite disgusted by the task, which would take a normal person more than a day to complete. Eva set out with the driver, studying her list of restorers, many of whom she hadn't seen since the attack on Artemy. Most of the people on the list were wanted, so she directed the guard to stop at their homes, which was the likeliest place to find them in the middle of the day. Eva hurriedly approached each door and spoke to the restorers, taking care not to expose anyone who was keeping his affliction a secret, and asking, when appropriate, who they thought Aaron's enemies might be. She made the rounds as the day drew on, making her last stop at the home of Gondolieri Rattrap, just as the sun was disappearing over the wall. Eva strode up the walk and glanced into the window of Gondolieri's living quarters, noticing that the curtains were drawn and the light behind them seemed to make them glow. The curtains were completely closed, and a dagger of brightness stabbed through them. Eva stopped and walked, puzzling over it for a moment, and then, instead of going to the door, Eva snuck up to the window and peered in. Her heart clutched. Gondolieri's living quarters had been transformed into something so incredible that Eva had to turn around and look at Quill to make sure she wasn't going senile. She turned back to the slit in the curtain and drank in the sight. The entire room was covered in ice. Stasiolites of ice came down from the ceiling, and stalagmites grew up from the floor, and all of it glowed a bright blue-white. The furniture was encased in it, and in the middle of the room, atop a chair that had bloated its twice to its size due to the layers of ice that had built up on it, sat Gondolier Rattrap, wearing dark glasses and patchwork coat adorned with, Eva had to look twice to make sure, chicken feathers. Eva didn't quite know what to make of it. How could the ice even exist in the heat of Quill? There was something vaguely familiar about it, something that tugged at her memory, but right now Eva had a new question on her mind. She faithfully went to the door and knocked. She waited a few minutes and knocked again. Just as she decided that Gondolieri was going to ignore her, the door flew open. "Oh, hello," Gondolieri said. She now wore her regular clothing, and there was no sign of dark glasses. "Greetings," Eva said. She slid over to one side of the door, trying to see inside the house. "Aaron wanted to ask me if you could come to a restorer's meeting at the palace in about an hour." She managed to glance into the living quarters and saw that it looked like every other wanted house in Quill. There was no ice anywhere. Gondolieri didn't seem anxious at all about Eva standing there, and she didn't seem to be hiding anything either. "The restorers," she said with a laugh. "I thought we had disbanded." Eva smiled. "Seems that way, doesn't it?" she mused. "I guess Aaron wants to see who the former restorers is still on his side, and perhaps find out if he has any enemies." Gondolieri laughed out loud, which was something the people of Quill never did, so it was all the more shocking to Eva. "Aaron? Enemies? Oh, well, of course not. How could anyone be against that boy?" Gondolieri looked hard at Eva. Eva lifted her chin ever so slightly, her lips set in a line. "Exactly," she said, her voice thin but not without a hint of accusation as well. They stood for a moment, regarding each other through narrowed eyes. Finally, Gondolieri broke the strained silence. "Please tell the High Priest I can't make the meeting." Eva nodded slightly. "I will deliver the message." As the Quillitary vehicle carried Eva back to the palace at snail's pace, Eva Fathom gazed out the window, lost in thought. Fifty-one. Warbler Calls. Inspiration struck, and as the ship traveled toward Warbler, Alex took out his notebook and drew tiny pictures of each member of his army. He tapped them with a little bit of rubber, affixing the magical coating that would keep it from being destroyed under most circumstances. By late afternoon, the pirate ship was drawing near to Warbler again, and this time it was heading straight for it. Alex was relieved, but still jittery. It was a dangerous mission, the evidence of which was found in the fresh scars around Megan's neck. As they drew close to the island, Alex gathered the Artemans together to discuss the mission and go over their plan. He held up the mat, reminded everyone of their routes, and he handed out the pictures he'd drawn earlier. "Even if you've never tried magic, you should be able to do this. If you are captured or in trouble, close your eyes and touch this drawing and think or say the word seek. It will send out a ball of fire. Show me your picture and guide me to your location. We will come for you. Don't be afraid." He paused, a lump in his throat, while he waited for everyone to either pocket their picture if they have pockets, or for Megan to stick it to their bellies if they were statues or creatures. "Now would be a good time to get some water and food if you can stand to eat," he said. "I sure can't," he added with a grin, which brought a round of nervous laughs. "I'll see you back at your stations in 20 minutes, ready to go." They all dispersed, leaving Alex alone with his thoughts again. He bounced on the balls of his feet, focused but anxious, and took a few deep breaths. Simba flew over to him.
"And what if you're captured or in trouble?"
Alex looked up. "What?"
"You gave everyone a way to call for help but yourself. Don't tell me I'm going to have to ransack the whole island searching for you," he said.
He started. "I guess I didn't think of that." He paused and then said, "But I can't give a drawing to myself because the seek spell won't go anywhere."
"I'm aware of that," Simber said.
He held the side of his paw to a burning torch for a few moments, brought it to his mouth and bit down hard, making a cracking noise. He turned his paw and let something slide from his mouth into it.
"Somebody's got to take care of you, I suppose," he said gruffly.
He tossed it to Alex. Alex caught it and opened his hand. It was the stone dew claw from Simber's paw. "Oh, Simber," Alex said, "you didn't have to ruin yourself."
"Well, I can't draw. Besides, I don't use that claw anyway. I didn't exactly make it, but it grew after Marcus made me. So I'm hoping it counts as something I created. It's all I have. Just stick it in your pocket and be quiet about it."
Simba frowned, which was an even surer sign that he cared. Alex could hardly speak. "Thank you," he said in a quiet voice. Simba nodded and went back to his post. Alex put the stone claw in his pocket, and it clinked against something. Alex reached farther and pulled out the 2 spell prototypes that Lonnie and Sam Heed had made. "Oh, yeah," he said, smiling. He closed his hands over them and wished on them, and then slowly he opened his hand and stared at them, thinking hard. "Wait a second," he whispered. His lips parted and he sucked in a short breath, and then he closed his hand over them tightly and pumped his fist. "Yeah," he said, "that's a bonus." And as he slipped them back into his pocket, the captain called out, "Blast my skull! It's land!"